What's up, everyone? This is the Ready for Launch podcast brought to you by the Compete Network, powered by Clue. And this is a show where we break down product launches, share our favorites, and explain why they work. I'm Andy McIver-Bicknell, and I'm here with my co-hosts Tamara Gorminski and Jason Oakley. And we have a very special topic for you in this episode. We're going to be debating the best launches from the best marketer of all time. No, not Steve Jobs, not Elon Musk, no, not David Ogilvy. I'm talking about the legendary, often imitated but never duplicated, Taylor Swift. Now, Grayson, you can't, don't soundbite that because I feel like I'm going to get raked over a bunch of coals for that. But I do mean it. I think that there's something to be said here. There's something to be said here. That's right. Because Taylor Swift can teach us product marketers, right, a thing or three about product launches. And so, I got to ask, Jason, what's your favorite T-Swift song?
Ooh, I think, I always look back at the first one that got me on to Taylor Swift or like put her on my radar and I listened to would have been Shake It Off. And then, so that is definitely one of the ones I think about most and or not think about most, but you get my point. And then I think these days my favorite one's Karma. Karma was like,
ooh, Karma. I
like Karma. Yeah, good one. All right. What do you think,
I like
T?
That.
Yeah.
My favorite Taylor Swift album is the Red album, and I feel like there's a lot of really good songs on there. I'm gonna say the All Too Well, the long version, classic of it. But I was at the concert. We were talking about this before we started recording. I was at the concert, her Vegas show, and I feel like I fell in love with every single song all over again. Like, I actually felt like there's some albums that I preferred over others going into that concert. And then afterwards, I'm like, oh no, it's a masterpiece. Like, they all fit together so well.
So good. I was about to say, like, so we were talking about this beforehand. Yeah. Tamara is like a legit super fan.
Yeah.
Me and Jason, I would say, are like average fan. We everyone here loves Taylor Swift. We can admit that there's a lot of greatness here, and we're going to talk about that. Before we dive in, though, let's go over a little bit of a scoreboard because, again, this is a competition. We have our voting here on this podcast, and then we have an audience choice poll that we post on LinkedIn afterwards to hear what you all think in terms of who won the episode. And so, Grayson, why don't you tell us where we're at right now?
So right now we're on, this is episode 5, and we've had, as of recording, we've had 2 audience votes, and then obviously we have the results of the previous episodes. So right now the leaderboards, we have Mara in the lead with 2 wins from the actual episode, and then Jason and Andy are tied for 2nd and 3rd with 1 win each.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah. Baby. I'll take that. Are you kidding me? I worked hard for that win.
And it was well-deserved.
Thank you. Thank you.
The fight for the throne is between Jason and Andy right now. And then with the audience results, so the audience get to vote after each episode who you think won, we have 2 votes, as I said, and right now Mara has won 1 and Jason has won 1. Andy, maybe this,
and this next, this third one's gonna be mine. Yeah, don't you worry. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, I hear you.
There's a poll open right now. Do Andy solid, just go vote for him.
Yeah. No. I don't need that. I don't. Yeah, if I need to earn these votes, are you kidding me? That's, I like, fair. Being the dark horse. Let's do
you
this.
Don't want the pity vote.
I don't want the pity.
That's
vote.
True.
Yeah. But don't look at the poll results because you'll see that I vote for myself every single time. Do you two do that? What do you guys do? Or do you just leave it?
You can do that if you do it on mobile. Because I didn't see on a desktop where I could do that. It didn't seem like it was an option to vote for myself.
No,
you can certainly do
Andy
that.
Andy hasn't hosted a poll yet because he hasn't won.
Oh, right. That's it, Andy. Yeah, that's right.
When you host the poll, you can't vote for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a little bit of a disadvantage, but
there's no cheating here. These are full like wins that we are all earning.
Yeah. I was tempted, but I know how I feel about Andy doing it, so that's
okay.
Why.
Well, there you go. That's you can feel however you want. All right, let's do this. Let's do randomizer. Let's jump in.
But first, before we get into that, I think we should talk about what we mean by the theme of this week's episode, right? So this came about because we were talking about different episodes that we might want to do. I think we were talking about like the best non-internet launch. And I said, oh, I want to do a Taylor Swift launch. And then that led to us saying, well, actually, there's so much great material here. We could do a whole episode. And so what counts as a launch? I mean, a product could be anything. A product can be an album. It could be a concert. It could be merchandise that a person sells. I think lots of times we think about product like a software product, but we've already shown a little bit on this show that that doesn't have to be the case. So I think we agreed that we would each take a different major launch that she's done. And I think we're all choosing maybe an album. I'm actually not sure yet, but that's basically it. So we'll talk a little bit about like, how did she launch that? What were the techniques that she used? And then how can we apply that back to our own product?
Yes.
So in Taylor Swift's words, are you ready for it?
Oh, okay. All right. I am ready for it. Get it.
And by it, do we mean the randomizer, the legendary randomizer?
I think
we are
ready
for
meant.
It.
I think that's it.
That's exactly what Taylor Swift meant when she wrote that lyric.
Okay, let me click randomize. Tamara is first, Jason is second, right. And Andy is third.
Here we go. Let's do it.
3, 2, 1.
Okay. I love that I'm going first because the launch that I chose is actually her most recent one. So it's the launch of her new album, her upcoming album, The Tortured Poet Department. It's going to be her 11th studio album, which is crazy, considering she was born in 1989. And she's coming off of her hottest year yet in the middle of the Eras tour. So there's already a lot of hype and excitement here. I love this example because I actually think it demonstrates how she's been able to put into use so many different techniques that she's mastered over the last few years. So I'll talk a little bit today about like puzzles, themes, the concept of community-led growth. And so I love them going first because it's almost like the culmination of everything that she's learned previously. So important context, though, before I go into why I chose this launch. Leading up to the announcement of this launch, Swifties everywhere were waiting for the announcement of Reputation, Taylor's version. So she only has 2 more original albums left to re-record. And a Reputation everyone felt like was going to be the next one up. And people have been decoding Easter eggs for months now, thinking that she's teasing a Reputation announcement. So that's really important context. So the reason I love this launch, I've broken it into 2 parts. I'm going to talk about the announcement day, and then I'm going to talk about before and after the announcement. So the announcement day, February 4th, the day of the Grammys. And things start early. So we wake up and she's changed her profile pictures on all of her social media platforms. And now everything is black and white. This is important because the Reputation album is all black and white. So everyone thought like, oh, today's the day. This is going to be it. Then her website is down the entire day with an error message. But the error message isn't actually an error message. It's a word puzzle that when you solve the word puzzle, it says red herring. And so it's like, oh, is she telling us that what we think is happening today isn't actually happening today? Like, people are like buzzing. So now it's the red carpet of the Grammys. People feel like something's definitely happening today. She comes out and she's wearing like a white and black outfit. Again, very Reputation vibes. She also has this like choker on with a watch. It's set to midnight. Her midnight album is up for an award. But also, does that mean she's announcing something at midnight? So like the internet has gone crazy. Everyone is watching. And so by the time she wins, goes on stage to accept her Grammy, everyone is just like waiting with bated breath. But no one expected what she actually did, which was basically she turned her Grammy announcement, like acceptance speech, into the announcement of her new album, The Tortured Poets Department. So everyone's like freaking out. They had no idea she's been working on it. She says she's been working on it for 2 years and it's this big secret that she's been keeping. And I love this because actually something more important was even happening. So she won Album of the Year for the 4th time, and she actually set a brand new record with this. She's the first and only artist to win 4 times. And that accomplishment in itself was completely overshadowed by how like excited the world was about the launch announcement. And like, I cannot think of many other products that your product announcement gets that much excitement, right? So then she runs off stage. She says she posts on Instagram. I'm sure it's her team doing it. But she follows up with like the album cover and a little line from it. And then in less than 24 hours, there's more than 13 million likes. And the album surpassed the first hour pre-order for Midnight, the previous album, in less than half the time. So people are like ready and waiting. They want to buy it. And what I love about the Grammy announcement is obviously there's so many things packed into this one launch day. But she didn't like create this event herself. She basically hijacked the Grammys. and used someone else's platform. But also, she like anchored this new product in her past success. She doesn't need to talk about her past success. We all know. But she basically was like, do you love this Grammy winning album? I've got another one ready to go. It's like the ultimate testimonial, right? Okay, so that's Grammy Day. That's the day of the announcement. But what I think makes this launch even better is that she was able to generate buzz and excitement both leading up to the Grammys and then after. And I think this is the magic of Taylor Swift, is that she keeps people so engaged in everything that she does. It really is a community, right? We're Swifties. So every choice that she made about this product was an intentional one, we think. And this is kind of the fun of Taylor Swift, is like no one knows if like we're making this stuff up or if she's intentional about this. But here's some of the things people are talking about with the album. So the album launches on April 19th. The day that that album will be released is exactly 1 year to the day when her best friends, Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds, unfollowed her ex on Instagram. And this is like a very important day in like the Swiftie universe, right? Because this album is meant to be the breakup album with that ex. The name of the album is a hint towards Joe's, her ex, WhatsApp group. So he had a group chat called the Tortured Man Club, and this is now called the Tortured Poets Department, right? So it's like, come on, there's so many similarities there. The theming of the album is top notch. I think we talk a lot about launch themes, and she totally leans into this idea of like a poet or a writer. Instead of songs, they're called files. The aesthetic of the album and everything, the lyrics, it's very this like dark academia look, which is very on trend right now and definitely plays into this idea of almost like the Dead Poets Society, if you remember that movie. And she just kept like the drumbeat of the conversation going. So she took some of the techniques she's used on past launches. And one of them was to have exclusive artwork and songs on different versions of her album. So she announces 4 special editions of the album, physical editions. Each one will come with their own exclusive song and its own artwork. And she didn't just announce them on one day as well. She kind of drips them out over a series of weeks. So people are like constantly talking about the album, either decoding the Easter eggs or talking about what's to come. And I think the biggest one of all is like, I actually think this is just a big promotion for the Reputation re-record. So if Reputation was like the beginning of her relationship with Joe, then Tortured Poets is the end of it. It's bookends, they're mirror albums. They're both black and white. She released Reputation when she was at her lowest. She's releasing Tortured Poets when she's at her highest. And so I think it's one big extra publicity stunt. But what I will say is, with Tortured Poets Department, she isn't just launching a new album. She's launching a new era.
Oh, nice. Wow. Did you have that sentence written down? Like, that was great.
I did craft well that done. Sentence.
Well done. My goodness. All right.
What do you all guys right. think?
I think it's cool. I just love how she uses Easter eggs. Like, she's so good at it. That, like, landing page with the, like, red herring kind of thing. Like, it's, yeah. She's very good at that. She does. She may be very good at many things. But, like, the way she does Easter eggs and stuff. And the way that her fan base is, like, so engaged at figuring these things out. Like, how did they know that her watch was set to midnight? Did someone, like, screenshot a picture of her with a watch on and, like, zoom in and stuff? Like,
oh, yes. I mean, people are obsessed with this. Like, there's Reddit. You know, you can go very, very deep on this. There's Twitter threads. There's everything. And I think that's what I loved about this launch is, like, people are constantly decoding everything she's doing, everything she's wearing, anything she releases. But with this, it was, like, because there's so many things on one day, people were, like, watching the whole day. And almost this, like, movement came up on that day to be, like, what is happening today? Today feels important. And no one knew until the end of the day why it was important, which was kind of
that is so cool.
I just think it's so badass that they planned this entire launch based on the fact that she's going to win album of the year. Like, all right, let's just assume that you're going to win the most prestigious musical award of the year. And then when you do that, X, Y, or Z things, like, do you think that they had a plan B if she didn't win, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. She was up for a lot of different awards between album of the year, like pop vocal album of the year. There was a song nomination. So I think the plan was probably like whatever your first award is, then you launch that. Mm. Maybe. But I did see some stuff online being like, I wonder what the backup plan was.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, what if she hadn't won anything? I mean, then maybe she still would have posted on Instagram and all of the other things that happened that day would have also made sense. Like, that's what I loved about it too. It's not like her being on stage at the Grammys was the only thing that made that day successful. It was one of many different things. And so they all intertwined together.
Right.
Maybe she would have walked up on stage with the person who was getting it. She would have taken it and then said, I'm going to let you finish.
Kanye
West move.
Yeah.
And then made her announcement.
Oof. That will be.
Most people who know Taylor Swift will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, that's old school Taylor Swift. Her first album? No, that was a music video. That was the VMAs, I think.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But Kanye was the one who went up and took it. Yeah. He thought someone else should have won it, right?
Beyonce. Yeah, he thought it should have been for all single ladies. I do remember that. Yeah. Now, all these memories are flooding back. It's crazy, too. Taylor Swift she's still so young. That's, I think, the craziest thing. Oh, my God. Like, she's just been in the zeitgeist for so long, but is still, like, cranking out and doing these incredible launches. It's wild.
Yeah. I also love the idea of these, like, two mirroring albums and, like, this, just how everything is, like, so connected. And it's because every album is, like, a story of her life. They are all naturally just going to be connected, and just like one, the fact that this one's the end of a relationship and the other one's the beginning of that relationship and the two can go together. It makes so much sense that they're kind of like two albums that can almost come as a package. You know, you listen to them, it's almost like getting the full story. It's very cool.
Exactly. Okay. Who's next?
So do we remember who's second, or should I?
As Jason, we remember.
Yes. Jason, you are up.
All right. So Grayson, I'm going to pretend I'm talking to you, and because I find this is a very interesting story wrapped up in this one. So what I'm talking about is all of Taylor's re-released Taylor's version albums. And so for anyone who's kind of, I'll give you the backstory. So the reason I like this launch, or call it a series of launches, is because it takes advantage of a few different things. One is controversy. Controversy wrapped up in this whole thing. But it's controversy involving Taylor, but it also made into a bigger story than that, and something more than just one person and the rights to their music. It also takes advantage of nostalgia, and we'll talk about that. And the other is it takes advantage of a major event or events, being the Eras Tour. So we'll talk about all those three things. First, I want to give you some context. So in order to understand this, you should understand the backstory. So Taylor's been around. She recorded her first album, or released her first album, in 2006. When she signed in 2005, she was 15, she signed with a record label called Big Machine Records. Part of that deal was that she didn't own the rights to her music. She didn't own the masters. And I'm not an expert on music rights and all that, but not owning the masters means you don't own those studio recordings, meaning that you can't decide necessarily like when they're played, if they're used in like a commercial or in a movie or in a documentary or anything like that. Like, you don't own the rights to that music. And so Taylor always wanted to own her masters, own the rights to her music. So in 2018, she announced she was leaving them and signing with Republic Records and Universal Music Group. Part of that deal was that she now owned her masters. Like, any album she made with them, she was going to own the rights to it. So June 30th, 2019, this guy Scooter Braun acquired Big Machine Records. And they had some run-ins in the past, and they didn't really like each other, so they had that past relationship. But he basically acquires Big Machine Records, and Taylor writes a Tumblr post basically the same day announcing that she did not know this was happening. She'd always hoped that she was going to be able to buy her masters back. So she was always going to hope that she was going to be able to go to Big Machine Records and buy her masters and own the rights to her music. But they basically sold it as part of this deal and didn't really give her a chance. So around this same time, Kelly Clarkson actually writes a tweet. And a lot of people credit Kelly Clarkson with like giving this idea for these re-released albums. And she says, just the thought, you should go and re-record all the songs that you don't own the masters on exactly how you did, but put brand new art in some kind of incentive so fans will no longer buy the old versions. I'd buy all the new versions just to prove a point. And basically, this is like making it very clear of a couple of things. One, it's like, yes, Kelly Clarkson, along with all of Taylor's fans, would be willing to support. They love, like, they're avid Taylor fans. They love Taylor. They would be willing to support Taylor if she put out these new versions. But it also is about something bigger, too, because all artists want to own the rights to their own music. So it's not just Taylor that is kind of fighting for the rights to her own music here and wanting to release her, you know, making her own albums. People buying them is not just going to support Taylor, but it's also about something bigger and a kind of a movement to support all artists owning the rights to their own music. So August 22nd, 2019, Taylor Swift announces plans to re-record her first 5 albums. So that's to kind of tee it up. After that, there's a lot of just public controversy building around these albums, the right to these albums. So November 14th, 2019, Taylor shares a letter. She's accepted on to receive a reward at the American Music Awards. And she's told, she tells everyone she was told that she cannot perform her own music on TV. Also says that at the same time, she's supposed to do a Netflix documentary coming up. And they're saying she's not allowed to use the recordings in that either. They eventually give her approval and she goes on the American Music Awards. And she wears a shirt that has the names of all of her albums. And the fans all point out that it looks like it's prison writing, as if they're in prison. She then starts to talk about this very publicly, too. So she was at the Billboard's Women in Music event. She accepted a first ever Woman of the Decade Award. And in her speech, she called out Scooter Braun, told everyone a lot of the details about this story. She then starts to reference it in a lot of her music, too. In the song The Man, she makes reference to this feud. In her Folklore album, in My Tears Ricochet and Mad Woman, those are two songs, she mentions it there, and also in Evermore. So on April 9th, 2021, Taylor releases Fearless, which was the first of these albums. And in her prologue, she says, artists should own their own work for so many reasons, but the most screamingly obvious one, that the artist is the only one who really knows that body of work. And so she's making it more than just, I own the rights to these. She's making it more about this bigger picture of artists should own their own music. And another one just to toss in, on June 18th, 2021, she announced a re-recorded Red album, and it was on Scooter Braun's birthday, which is pretty sick. So that's around the controversy. The other's around nostalgia. So basically, in re-releasing these albums, she's not just marketing her album, she's also marketing nostalgia. Basically, she's in nostalgia marketing is all about playing on the emotion of fond memories to build a positive association with something new. So she's capitalizing on whatever her fans were feeling when those albums were first released. I know this from my wife. When she's listening to these re-released albums, she's feeling what she felt and like those emotions from the time they were first released. And with these, she's also providing like new content. She's doing like unreleased songs that she hoped she wanted to release with these albums. She's doing new video content, all of that. So definitely playing on nostalgia. Also, a big part of this is the Eras Tour. So whether she released these to support the Eras Tour, whether these support the Eras Tour supports these albums, it's probably a combination of both. But the Eras Tour, instead of promoting her latest album, Midnights, it's basically promoting all of her past catalogs, every era in Taylor Swift's career. And so the Eras Tour is the second highest grossing concert series of all time after Elton John's Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour. And it also spawned the second highest grossing concert documentary at the box office, second only to Michael Jackson's This Is It, who like massive, massive concert, massive documentary. She did it all in one thing. But the tour is, it's not only a super successful tour, but it's also validated the Taylor's versions. So she's sapping the original like versions, revenue streams, but she's also like giving these credibility where they're becoming now the definitive releases of these albums, which is wild. Even more so to like highlight how big of an impact this is. Billboard reported a recent push from record companies to greatly extend the eligibility for re-recordings from just a few years after the original release, as in Taylor's case, to an unprecedented 10, 15, or 30 years. That's just showing now all the record companies are like terrified of just what she's done in this case here. So I'll leave it at that. But yeah. Anyway, what do you think?
That is so good. Oh my God. Yeah. When you mentioned that you were doing like the Taylor's version albums, I was like, oh, that is a great pick. What more can I say? Like, it's just like proving it to the man, like doing your own thing, like owning all the like creative rights to everything that you're doing. Like, that's like what every artist wants. And you hear all these horror stories from a lot of your favorite bands or artists who get really like taken advantage of by people who are essentially using them just to make a profit. And I get it. Like, it's the music business and all that kind of stuff. But there are so many horror stories out there of like how really great acts, like their careers were cut short because they weren't able to make things work in the long term because of these terrible situations. And so I love that Taylor Swift was able to like see such success and like really just like change the game for other folks too.
I think you totally nailed it on the nostalgia piece, because like it's interesting. So I'm a little bit older than Taylor Swift, but I feel like I kind of like grew up with Taylor Swift, you know? And so to your point about Jason, your wife, like kind of living back in those memories as she's listening to the albums, I felt the exact same. But what I love about it is Taylor plays on that, but then also is doing the same activity herself. So she grew up herself throughout these eras, right? To use her language. And when she's doing these albums, the music is exactly the same. To your point, the re-recordings are like exactly how it was recorded the first time. But then she adds like a bit of reflection on it, right? So her artwork is a modern take on what the original artwork looked like, right? Like she actually does a new photo shoot. She releases the vault tracks, as you mentioned, and there's commentary that comes with it. And I love hearing how she talks about the vault tracks and about her experiences creating these albums, because you can see that she's also in this very like reflective state.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important part. Like it is what she's in her early to mid 30s. She really is entering that new stage of life. And you can, I think this is very representative of that. And it's drawing out a lot of the same feelings in much of her fans.
So if you're listening to Taylor's version of any of like the original albums, like side by side, like you won't be able to tell the difference. It's like that identical.
Almost.
There was like one or two songs where there's a slight difference, but most of the time it's like identical. That was the goal. Exactly. And then Andy, each Taylor's version also has vault tracks, which are basically songs, not new songs. They were songs that were written, but not recorded when she did the original one for whatever reason. As you know, it's like you can only make a record so long. And so that's kind of fun. And actually, it's my favorite part of all of the Taylor version albums because of like new music. This is so exciting, right?
Yeah. And the one,
like your favorite song of her all time. Like she made that one longer. Like she added to it and did it. Yeah.
That's exactly it. So the cut of it that was on the Red album was like a regular length. I don't know, 3 minutes and something. And I guess this whole time there was this like super mega long version of it, over 10 minutes long. But it was like, no one's going to listen to a 10 minute long song. No one's going to want to see that in concert, whatever it might be. And then I think she was actually, she just spoke about this. She was even nervous about including it in the vault because it's fairly unheard of for a song to be that long. And then like it very quickly became the most anticipated song and then the most played song off that album. And when I was at the Eras show, she sang it live and it was like people were literally crying. They had such a reaction to it. Like, no, it's true. There was so much emotion tied up in it. And it's the song itself has so much emotion. So people are like, some of people's favorite songs from Taylor are now vault songs, which is like really
cool. That's cool. Nice.
I'm surprised that we haven't seen other artists do like a my version, or even if it, you don't call it like my version, but like re-record some of their material just to like, I don't know, like you hear like remasters and like re-releases and stuff like that, but I'm surprised that no one else has tried to do that, really.
Yeah, there was an interesting Azuma research for this, and I know we're over time, but Prince had tried to do a lot. He was in a big controversy when during his career and like towards it, and they kind of pointed out how like Prince was not successful at doing what Taylor's trying to do. Now, I don't think he did the same thing, but I do think that like having to go and re-record new versions and then go getting like radios to play these new versions and like, you know what I mean? Like it's like so hard. And I think it just goes to show like how this marketing engine that Taylor's created is like that good.
Great pick.
All right, Andy.
All right, here we go.
3, 2, 1.
All right, so right off the bat, I'm just going to tell you that this choice is not going to be the most like insane, mind-bending growth hack that you've ever heard. This has nothing to do with the Super Bowl or the Grammys or any other celebrity for that matter, nor did it change how artists view the ownership of their music. But it has everything to do with the power of knowing your diehard fans, which is it's something that we can all agree on is important for product marketers to understand. I think we can all agree on that. I've seen how impactful that is from a PMM's perspective with some of the companies I've worked for. But I've also seen how effective it is, you know, just like personally as a fan, you know, of a bunch of different acts. And so let me just give you a couple of examples of how this has worked for me personally. Okay. So the first mega fan base that I'm in is for a band called Between the Buried and Me. Either of you ever heard of them? Yep. No, I'd be surprised if you were, a lot of people haven't. They're a technical death metal band. They don't have a ton of mainstream success, you could say, but they still profit off of their tours by leaning on their mega fans like me. And so when they come to town during their tours, they'll offer up an hour long like fan meet and greet session where they'll break down the mixes and the masters personally, like with a group of people. It's like an extra $80 on top of your concert ticket. But like, yeah, I buy it every single time. No question. I can just like be in the room with like my favorite band talking about an album that I love. Yeah, of course, I'm going to do that. Another example. One of my favorite bands of all time is Guns N' Roses. And when they were writing what would become their Use Your Illusion albums, they thought that they're just going to do a double album, like one album, just like really big. And they knew, though, that if they were to release that, the record stores would just store it in a protective case because, you know, they're going to be more expensive and people like they could shoplift it and it'd just be that much more of a loss. And that they didn't want that. Guns N' Roses didn't want that because they knew that it was really important for people to be able to feel like the albums and like just like easily purchase it. If you like put in that extra layer, like protecting the album or whatever, you would probably sell a little less. And so they ended up releasing two albums, Use Your Illusion 1 and Use Your Illusion 2. It would end up costing more, but they knew that it wouldn't be an issue for their fans because they were hungry for new material at the time. And they were right. And both albums ended up being the first to be in number 1 and 2 on the Billboard charts, respectively, from one band at one time. And so anyway, back to Taylor Swift. She's done a bunch of stuff for her diehard fans. And this is, again, like why I'm like tying back, like why it's so important and why I think this is so cool. And like the thing that I think was probably one of the most profitable things that she ever did was releasing the four variants of her album Midnights. So for those that don't know, Midnights was, it is an album that she released in 2022. And it was her 10th studio album. And like I mentioned, in addition to this album being released on Spotify and Apple Music to stream, she also released four physical album variants that came in different colors. And so it came in Moonstone Blue Edition, Jade Green Edition, Blood Moon Edition, and Mahogany Edition. And so each version includes the same 13 songs on the stand as the standard album, which I think Moonstone Blue is like the standard. But then they each had four unique front and back cover arts, unique CD disc artwork. And then she partnered with Target to release another version of the album called the Lavender Edition, which included three bonus tracks that weren't on the other albums. Now, all right, so me, average Taylor Swift fan, if I hear this, I'm going to go like, okay, got it. So I'm just going to pick like the album that has like the coolest album art and I'm going to call it a day. But if you ask a Swiftie like what they're going to do, they'll be like, oh, okay, I have five albums that I need to buy, not just one, right? And so, and indeed, that is what happened, right? So this Midnights was the best-selling album of 2022 and the second best-selling album of 2023. And I believe it was partially due to the fact that her mega fans purchased multiple versions of the same album. And it must have been successful because she even did the same play with her new album, like Tamara mentioned, Tortured Poets Department. And so in either case, like I mentioned, this was not like the craziest release ever. This was very, very simple, and it just 100% spoke to the people that she knew would show up for her, which were her Swifties. And so I thought it was a genius move. Very simple, but in either case, that is what I got for you.
That's awesome.
So I thought I remember that you were going to do that, which was why I touched on it gently in mind. But I actually think there's something interesting we could discuss here, because I think some of the, I hear two sides, so also controversial. Some fans are like, this is amazing. I want to collect them all, their collection items. But then other people are saying Taylor Swift is just trying to gouge her fans, right, and make more money. But I don't think that's the case. And so I think that maybe this is an interesting conversation for us around the concept of like pricing at product launch and the idea of like an add-on, right? Because I think what I'm hearing you say, Andy, is that like you're viewing this as value adds, right? And yes, as a way for Taylor to monetize it. So it's like, it's good business sense for her, but it's not like she's making everyone buy this. She's just saying like, if you do want to buy it, there's five versions. And so it's like for the same thing we think about add-on pricing and product launch, that's for the people who have a very high willingness to pay. There's only a few of them, but for those people, they want to be able to get that thing. And I think that's what we're seeing here with the example of the unique albums as well.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. It really just depends on, like, on really the product at the end of the day and just, like, how much value add the thing is. For, like, bands, I mean, I've seen, like, original pressings of records go for, like, tens of thousands of dollars. And so, like, when I see, oh, yeah, like, if you want these other three versions of the same album you bought, like, it'll run you another maybe $100 kind of a thing. Like, I don't know. At the end of the day, like, is that really, like, affecting people in the way that, to me, that's a little bit of like a, I don't know, trying to find some kind of like conflict or like issue when I don't really think there is one there. The bottom line is I think that, yeah, like you're offering something extra to the people who claim to be like the biggest fans and want to get that extra stuff. And so I don't know, for me, I don't think that that's something that's crazy, like would be super expensive. I have seen like other meet and greets, like with artists where it's like, it runs you thousands of dollars just to like get like a high five from the guy or gal and like an autograph or whatever. I think that might be a little like iffy. This one personally, nah, I don't think that's an issue.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So then what was the big difference between the albums again? So I know the Target one, they got three new songs. Did every album they get new songs or was it mostly?
I didn't see that they got new songs, but yeah, it was like different cover art, different like CD, like the CD artwork as well. And I think like the inside like booklet might have been a little bit different as well. By and large, it wasn't like crazy different. If you put them all together afterwards, like if you got like all four, then it also like was a pretty cool, like maybe you would like want to hang it up and it could be like artwork or something like that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it had that angle too.
It's cool to think about that thought, like what the, I don't know, the thinking process around that pricing must have been, because if you looked across all the different ones, the different add-on you got was like new cover art. So could she release the album and then release like five different pieces of cover art and charged for those? And then they probably would have been like, well, you can't charge that much for cover art, but you can charge an album, and we know how much people pay for an album. So then it's like five albums, even though the only difference is cover art. It's just like an interesting thought around like pricing and packaging and like what people associate with like a type of product and how much you typically pay for it. Yeah, I don't know. Just,
yeah,
it's interesting.
You know, another thing that comes to mind, and I have no idea if music works this way or the algorithm on Spotify or whatever, but you know, on Netflix, how like there's actually different versions of the movie art as well, or the TV show art, and like what art I get shown might be completely different than what you two get shown based on our past viewing history. And I always think like, okay, how strategic would this be? Like, wow, by giving herself five options of different album art, maybe that would make the algorithm favor some of that too. And so it's just like another marketing play, right? When you have more variations that can be surfaced to different people that they might be attached to in different ways, it'll like make them more likely to watch, which is what happens on Netflix. But I'm thinking maybe it might be similar in Spotify. I have no idea.
Some performance marketing element to this. Yeah, you're exactly right.
I feel like that is a very practical thing that you can take and apply. I don't know how. I'm trying to think of like an example in the SaaS world.
I know, like something that's like it, well, you know what? Honestly, I mean, that's like a big thing with like NFTs at this point. Even though those are probably not like as popular, like might not be the best example of something working. But in either case, yeah, like. It's a little bit trickier with SaaS, I think. I would have to try to think of different examples of like how that would work.
Like, and another thing too, though, is it's funny that people would be like, yeah, she's trying to gouge her fans to buy all of them. But yet there's people who go to like all her concerts, right? Like there's people who go to multiple of the same concert or go see Dune like 10 times or something like that. Like there's, if you like an artist and you like the work, you'd be willing to, at least this way, she's giving them something. You know, they want to support her. She's giving
as
them
long as they like it,
different.
Then that's the end. That's the end. End goal is just to give fans something that they like. And if people like this, then cool. If you don't like it, then don't go off and buy it. Yeah,
totally. And that's what Taylor Swift does so well. It's like she's literally built a whole movement around her. Right. And she listens to the fans and then she gives them what they want. And then that makes them want to engage with her even more.
All right. So we're going to send our votes over to Grayson.
Exciting to see these roll in.
See these roll, like you're talking like order forms for like your own like
the books are flying in.
We got three people, but
You crack me up, dude. It's exciting here. I got tallies right here. Got a whiteboard.
I gotta keep them on their toes.
Like a telethon or something.
The results are in, and unlike last episode where it was a three-way tie, we actually have a winner.
Oh man!
Drum roll, please. Tamara has won.
Tamara!
Thank you. Thank you. Well done. You this earned may it. Be the highlight of my life.
Gotta get you a trophy for this one.
As long as Taylor Swift won, I would have been happy. I'm just happy we're doing this episode.
Do you think she'll tweet about it?
I think so.
I would just retire if she did. Okay. If our podcast fans can get Taylor Swift to retweet this, my life work is done.
At Taylor Swift. Yeah. Hey, we talked about you on our product marketing podcast. Take a listen.
What is product marketing?
Come on the show.
Come on the show. Yeah. I love it. But I think what was really cool was even in all three of our examples, you can see how her strategies kind of like fit together. She's not just doing, and I think this is something that like brands and product marketers can take away. Launch isn't like a one-time tactic. It's not like a gimmicky thing you do. It's like something that takes years, right? And it's actually being authentic. It's listening to your audience and taking feedback and iterating. And we see that throughout all of her eras, right? And all of the different launches she's done.
That's such a good point. Yeah, like all of our choices, I don't think they would have been possible or worked if she didn't have a successful career beforehand that she continued to lean on. And it just goes to show like how important it is to like just be consistent, touch on the things that you've done that's worked in the past, try new things, try to be creative, try new things that other people haven't done. 100%.
Community too. Like she's built such a loyal fan base and like community of Swifties. You know, I don't know many other artists who have nickname, who like people call themselves a nickname related to that artist. I know they exist, but
I don't know if we've heard that the folks in PMM camp call themselves campers.
Oh, there you go.
We took that from Taylor Swift. But it's true.
Not
it's
campy? A movement.
And she hasn't always been popular either. I mean, like she has always had her fan base, but it's not like she has always been as popular as she is right now. And I think what is cool is that she has just continually focused on delivering to her fans and doesn't really get distracted by everyone else. And then it's like the rest of the world can now see and appreciate. Like what I love about the Eras Tour is it's actually connecting her work and people are seeing, oh, wow, I see how you grew up. I see how your musical influence like grew over time and how I thought that maybe it was weird that you had a country album and then a pop album, but now I see how it like flew together. And so I think that finally everyone is appreciating, but she only got here by like focusing on a very specific like power group.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, just a reminder, who's going to post the poll then? So that's going to be tomorrow's going to post it. Yep.
No, you're going to post the poll.
No, you won the last episode.
Oh, because I won the last episode. Oh, great. So I gotta post the T-Swift one that I'm obviously going to lose. Okay, great. I see how that. And I can't even vote for myself. So I can't even get the pity vote. Okay. All right. Well, watch out for my profile on LinkedIn. And I'll post a poll about this episode that you can vote on. And so, that'll be just a joy to watch. Get the votes racked up personally every single time.
Although I think we all had really good, like they were all really good this week.
Yes, they were.
You know, anybody's game. Anybody's game, Andy.
Probably not Andy's.
It's not my game. It's not my game. I'll just casually duck out. I appreciate it. Thanks, Jason. Mine literally was just one component of Tamara's launch. So like that doesn't make any sense. I should have known better. I'll just try better next time. Don't worry. Anyway, that's the pod. Anything else?
Well, I think obviously we couldn't say goodbye without thanking our friends over at Clue and the Key Network. Thanks for making this episode possible. And yeah, looking forward to seeing everyone on the next episode.
Bye.
Cheers, everybody. See ya.